Chapter 42. The eyeglass came up as calmly, as deliberately as ever. Ah, Ferguson, what did I understand you to say the gentleman's name was?
Name?
He got no name.
Mummy.
Gyptian mummy.
Yes, yes.
Born here?
No.
Gyptian mummy.
Ah, just so.
Frenchman, I presume?
No.
Not Frenchman, not Roman.
Born in Egypt.
Born in Egypt. Never heard of Egypt before.
Foreign locality, likely.
Mummy, mummy.
How calm he is, how self-possessed.
Is, is he dead?
Oh, Sasser Blue, been dead 3,000 year.
The doctor turned on him savagely.
Here, now, what do you mean by such conduct as this?
Playing us for Chinamen, because we are strangers and trying to learn.
Trying to impose your vile second-hand carcasses on us.
Thunder and lightning, I've a notion to if you've got a nice fresh corpse, fetch him out.
Or by George we'll brain you.
We make it exceedingly interesting for this Frenchman. However, he has paid us back, partly, without knowing it.
He came to the hotel this morning to ask if we were up, and he endeavored as well as he could to describe us, so that the landlord would know which persons he meant.
He finished with the casual remark that we were lunatics.
The observation was so innocent, and so honest, that it amounted to a very good thing for a guide to say.
There is one remark already mentioned, which never yet has failed to disgust these guides.
We use it always, when we can think of nothing else to say.
After they have exhausted their enthusiasm pointing out to us, and praising the beauties of some ancient bronze image or broken dash-legged statue, we look at it stupidly, and in silence for 5, 10, 15 minutes, as long as we can hold out, in fact, and then ask,
Is he dead?
That conquers the serenest of them. It is not what they are looking for, especially a new guide.
Our Roman Ferguson is the most patient, unsuspecting, long-suffering subject we have had yet.
We shall be sorry to part with him.
We have enjoyed his society very much.
We trust he has enjoyed ours, but we are harassed with doubts.
We have been in the catacombs.
It was like going down into a very deep cellar, only it was a cellar which had no end to it.
The narrow passages are roughly hewn in the rock, and on each hand as you pass along, the hollowed shelves are carved out, from 3 to 14 deep, each held a corpse once.
There are names, and Christian symbols, and prayers, or sentences expressive of Christian hopes, carved upon nearly every sarcophagus.
The dates belong away back in the dawn of the Christian era, of course.
Here, in these holes in the ground, the first Christians sometimes burrowed to escape persecution.
They crawled out at night to get food, but remained under cover in the daytime.
The priest told us that Saint Sebastian lived underground for some time, while he was being hunted. He went out one day, and the soldier he discovered, and shot him to death with arrows. 5 or 6 of the early popes, those who reigned about 1600 years ago, held their papal courts, and advised with their clergy in the bowels of the earth. During 17 years, from A.D. 235 to A.D. 252, the popes did not appear above ground. 4 were raised to the great office during that period. 4 years apiece, or thereabouts.
It is very suggestive of the unhealthiness of underground graveyards as places of residence.
One pope afterward spent his entire pontificate in the catacombs 8 years.
Another was discovered in them, and murdered in the episcopal chair.
There was no satisfaction in being a pope in those days.
There were too many annoyances.
There are 160 catacombs under Rome, each with its maze of narrow passages crossing and recrossing each other, and each passage walled to the top with scooped graves its entire length.
A careful estimate makes the length of the passages of all the catacombs combined foot up 900 miles, and their graves number 7 millions.
We did not go through all the passages of all the catacombs.
We were very anxious to do it, and made the necessary arrangements, but our too limited time obliged us to give up the idea. So we only groped through the dismal labyrinth of St. Calixtus, under the church of St. Sebastian. In the various catacombs are small chapels rudely hewn in the stones, and here the early Christians often held their religious services by dim, ghostly lights. Think of Mass and a sermon away down in those tangled caverns underground. In the catacombs were buried St. Cecilia, St. Agnes, and several other of the most celebrated of the saints. In the catacomb of St. Calixtus, St. Bridget used to remain long hours in holy contemplation, and St. Charles Borromeo was wont to spend whole nights in prayer there. It was also the scene of a very marvelous thing. Here the heart of St. Philip Neri was so inflamed with divine love as to burst his ribs. I find that grave statement in a book published in New York in 1808, and written by F. William H. Nelligan, LL.D., M.A., Trinity College, Dublin, member of the Archaeological Society of Great Britain. Therefore, I believe it. Otherwise, I could not. Under other circumstances I should have felt a curiosity to know what Philip had for dinner. This author puts my credulity on its mettle every now and then. He tells of one St. Joseph Calasanctius whose house in Rome he visited. He visited only the house the priest has been dead 200 years. He says the Virgin Mary appeared to this saint. Then he continues. His tongue and his heart, which were found after nearly a century to be whole, when the body was disinterred before his canonization, are still preserved in a glass case, and after 2 centuries the heart is still whole. When the French troops came to Rome, and when Pius VII was carried away prisoner, blood dropped from it. To read that in a book written by a monk far back in the Middle Ages would surprise no one. It would sound natural and proper, but when it is seriously stated in the middle of the 19th century, by a man of finished education, an LL.D., M.A., and an archaeological magnate, it sounds strangely enough. Still, I would gladly change my unbelief for Nelligan's faith, and let him make the conditions as hard as he pleased. The old gentleman's undoubting, unquestioning simplicity has a rare freshness about it in these matter-of-fact railroading and telegraphing days. Hear him, concerning the church of Arakoeli. And the roof of the church, directly above the high altar, is engraved, Regina Coeli Leader Alleluia. In the 6th century Rome was visited by a fearful pestilence. Gregory the Great urged the people to do penance, and a general procession was formed. It was to proceed from Arakoeli to St. Peter's. As it passed before the Mole of Adrian, now the castle of St. Angelo, the sound of heavenly voices was heard singing, "It was Easter morn, Regina Coeli, leader, alleluia. Quia quem meruus di porter, alleluia, resurrexit sicut dixit, alleluia." The pontiff, carrying in his hands the portrait of the Virgin, which is over the high altar, and is said to have been painted by St. Luke, answered, with the astonished people, "Ora pro nobis tuum, alleluia." At the same time an angel was seen to put up a sword in a scabbard, and the pestilence ceased on the same day. There are 4 circumstances which confirm, the italics are mine, M.T., this miracle. The annual procession which takes place in the Western Church on the Feast of St. Mark, the statue of St. Michael, placed on the Mole of Adrian, which has since that time been called the Castle of St. Angelo, the antiphon Regina Coeli which the Catholic Church sings during Paschal time, and the inscription in the church. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.